Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast, Cybersecurity for Automobiles, BlackBerry's 7-pillar recommendation. I'm your moderator, Brandon Lewis, here with today's presenter, Grant Corbell, Head of Product Management at BlackBerry QNX. As Head of Product Management at BlackBerry's QNX Software Systems, Grant is responsible for managing the company's global product portfolio and strategy for the automotive and general embedded markets. Grant has over 25 years of experience in the embedded industry and is a recognized leader and spokesperson for connected and autonomous car technology and trends. In his 20-plus years with QNX, he has held a variety of leadership roles in engineering, marketing, and strategy. His experience at QNX is also complemented by previous senior leadership roles at Curtiss-Wright Controls and Token Software. Now let's address a few housekeeping items before we begin the event, which consists of roughly 50 minutes of interactive presentation, a couple of poll questions, 10 minutes of audience Q&A, and an exit survey, so be sure to stick around for the duration. Directing your attention to the features of your audience viewing console, the Enlarge Slides button will maximize the presentation slides to fill your entire screen. Second, the Download Slides button will allow you to download and print the slides if you'd prefer to follow along with a hard copy. The Forward to a Friend button allows you to send an email that includes a registration link to this eCast so that your friends and colleagues can also attend. And most importantly, the Ask a Question text box allows you to participate in the event by simply typing questions into the box and hitting the Submit Question button below. You can submit questions at any time during the course of the presentation, and we encourage you to do so early and often while you are reviewing the material. We'll address as many of these questions as possible during the closing Q&A, and if you have questions about the eCast operation itself, feel free to submit those, and one of our technicians will be happy to assist you. A final reminder before we get started is that all Open Systems Media eCasts are copyrighted and may not be recorded without prior permission. So at this point, we can get started, and I'd like to hand it off to Grant Corbell of BlackBerry QNX. Take it away, Grant.
Hey, thanks, Brendan. So the topic for today's webinar is Cybersecurity for Automobiles, BlackBerry's 7-pillar recommendation. This 7-pillar recommendation is really a holistic framework of principles that should be followed to make a car more secure against potential cybersecurity attacks. We're going to start by looking at key automotive trends, and then we're going to explore the cybersecurity recommendations to deal with these challenges that are related to the trends. As a company, we've been working closely with automakers, their Tier 1s, Tier 2 suppliers, as well as other key stakeholders for over two decades, and one thing's clear. We're all taking the issues of safety and security very seriously. Also, as an industry, we're very aware of the public's growing cybersecurity concerns and that we need to take proactive measures to ensure the safety and security of vehicles. So with that said, let's start by looking at four industry trends that expose modern vehicles to cyber attacks and potential failures. Trend number one, so cars are becoming more connected to the internet and connected to each other. They're getting connected to infrastructure around them. They're getting connected to devices such as mobile phones, key fobs. They're connected in the truest sense of the word via Bluetooth, cellular, and Wi-Fi. In Europe, we know that the EU has introduced eCall that will have your car communicate wirelessly to a public safety answering point or PSAP in the case of a serious accident. And of course, many cars already have an onboard telematics unit, or TCU, that communicates from the car to the back-end services. And, you know, a classic example of that, of course, is GM's OnStar system, where it connects your car to various connected services over a cellular link and has done so for actually over two decades now. So all of this means that the number of access points or breach points available to potential hackers is increasing. The second trend is that the amount of software in the car continues to grow dramatically. Today, we have anywhere from 80 to 100 million lines of software in the car. And to provide some perspective, the new Boeing 787 Dreamliner has around 7 million lines of code. And that 100 million lines of code in the car will grow over time. So as the amount of software grows, so does the attack surface. Simply put, the more software we have in the car, the more potential points of vulnerability we have. The third trend is autonomous driving. So we all know self-driving cars are no longer a question of if, but are now a question of when and how. Self-driving cars will need to have a complete understanding of the environment around them. They'll need to make use of onboard sensors and wireless communications to talk to other cars on the road, to talk to infrastructure, and even to communicate with pedestrians through their mobile phones. So as you can see, as these cars are communicating, these connections and communications introduce further breach points. So if a hacker could get in through one of these breach points and attack the car, And given these cars are talking to each other and talking to infrastructure and other endpoints, you could even get a viral effect propagating that breach across many vehicles and connections. And lastly, software in a car is not static. Next generation autonomous cars will deploy artificial intelligence, deep neural networks, and machine learning. You'll also have system and application software downloads. So this means that the software that was installed, tested, and certified as safe and secure at production will actually morph over time, and there'll need to be a way to ensure that the car remains safe and secure over its entire lifetime, despite these ongoing changes in software. So these are all trends, primary trends, that will make the modern car more exposed. We've all been hearing more and more about vehicle hacking. Essentially, the car has gone from being a completely closed environment to one where we have many different access points. And all of this happened in a relatively short amount of time. As you can see, we've had many well-publicized hacks, and as a result, public awareness has also increased dramatically. As an example, the CBS 60 Minutes television program even broadcast a whole segment on car hacking by DARPA about 2 years ago. Now, if we look at all of these hacks that have happened over the years, I think that the biggest wake-up call for the industry was the Jeep hack in 2015, where Chris Valasek and Charlie Miller hacked into their own Jeep and publicized exactly how they did it and what the consequences were. This drew a lot of attention from the automotive industry and the public at large. As an example of the level of public awareness, here's a recent global survey of over 8,000 participants across 6 countries. And we can clearly see that consumers now realize that a connected car has the potential to be targeted by a cyber attack. We also see that the vast majority of people have cybersecurity concerns when it comes to purchasing a self-driving car. So I think it's safe to say that the consumer now understands that cybersecurity is critical to the safe operation of cars. And as an industry, we have to continue to gain and maintain consumer confidence, because failing to do so could have a very negative effect on investment, innovation, market acceptance of connected, automated, and autonomous vehicles.
All right, here's a first poll question for you, the audience, and the question is, what do you think is the greatest challenge in protecting a car from cybersecurity threats? Multiple choice here. Do you think it's A, supply chain comprised of multiple tiers of suppliers with no established cybersecurity standards among them? B, complex architecture, a network of distributed computers or ECUs where an attack could allow unauthorized access to a safety-critical ECU in the car? C, long life cycles, 7 to 15-year vehicle life cycles, creates plenty of security vulnerabilities for out-of-date software or the introduction of malware into newly downloaded software? Or D, all of them? Give you a couple seconds to respond, and let's see the results. Wow, that's pretty overwhelming. What do you make of that, Grant?
This is great, and the survey says exactly, honestly, what I expected, and it's great to see. There really are many significant challenges, and we believe these are the three primary ones. And as the good news is we're all working on these. These are exactly the challenges that the BlackBerry 7-pillar recommendation aims to address. So this is great feedback, great validation of the recommendation. So fantastic. So why don't we dive right in to the rest of the presentation and see how we address these. So as I mentioned, we see three primary challenges in protecting the car. As Brandon mentioned earlier, there's a supply chain. So when a car is manufactured, the electronic hardware and software components that go into the car and built in supply by tens of vendors who have no common cybersecurity standards to adhere to as they build each of their components. You've got Tier 2 suppliers who provide components. You've got Tier 1 suppliers who take these components and build out modules. Then you have the automaker who designs and builds components and ultimately pulls everything together in the car. So the complexity of the supply chain effectively makes it quite porous, as every vendor and every component is a potential point of vulnerability. So how do you protect against this risk? The second challenge is that the car is made up of a network of computers called electronic control units, or ECUs. Some of these ECUs are safety critical, while some are not. For instance, an infotainment system is not considered safety critical, Because if your radio doesn't work or you have a small glitch on your infotainment display, that may be annoying, but it's not a major safety issue. But if your instrument cluster doesn't function properly or your braking doesn't function properly, that would definitely be a safety issue. So with this mix of connected safety and non-safety critical functions, how do you ensure that you can protect the entire network of mixed criticality ECUs in the car? Lastly, a car is on the road for a long time, somewhere between, 7 to 11 to 15 years. During that time, how do you protect the car on an ongoing basis? This time period brings risk as hackers will become more sophisticated, and in next generation cars, users may be downloading software that could even contain malware. Also over this time period, the car's software will obviously need to be updated. So, we've taken all this into consideration, leveraged our decades of automotive and cybersecurity experience, and are proposing a framework, a set of principles, that we believe are very important to protect the car. Here's the BlackBerry 7-pillar recommendation. These pillars are described for the automotive market, but of course, they can be extended to other markets as well. The 7-pillar recommendation is as follows. So pillar number one, how do you secure the supply chain? Then pillar number two, the use of trusted components and a defense in depth architecture. Third pillar is how do you isolate the car and the systems within the car from rogue messages? And four is all about infield monitoring, so that when the car's on the road, how can you monitor it to make sure it's healthy? Pillar five is when you identify a vulnerability or exposure, how do you rapidly and securely respond to that incident? Six is about how you manage the entire life cycle of the car, both from a safety and security perspective. And pillar seven, the last pillar, how do you build a safety and security culture to ensure that every organization involved in supplying electronics and software for the car is properly trained and implements safety and security best practices. So now, let's look at each of the seven pillars in more detail. As part of the first pillar, securing the supply chain, we need to ensure that we have what is called a root of trust. As we know, the supply chain involves many suppliers, each supplying hardware and software components. Our recommendation is that all hardware components need to be protected by injecting some cryptographic technologies such as certificates and crypto keys into the silicon. These certificates will serve as a kind of identification card so that one ECU wants to talk to another ECU or the network. This certificate can help guarantee that the ECU is authentic. What we're saying is that we need to ensure that every chip and ECU in the car can be properly authenticated and loaded with trusted software, regardless of the vendor tier or country of manufacture. This involves injecting every SoC, or CPU, with a private key during its manufacturing stage to serve as the root of trust to establish a complete chain of trust supporting secure boot and be able to verify every subsequent load of software on the ECU. This key injection is something that Certicom Asset Management System, or AMS, does today. Certicom is a business unit within BlackBerry, and they have many AMS boxes and semiconductor foundries, such that when the chip's being tested, the AMS actually injects the keys into each chip. Now let's talk about binary scanning. Given today's supply chain and supply chain in the future, ensuring that in-house and third-party software components meet industry and organizational quality and security standards is a huge challenge for today's automakers. In other words, how can the automaker be sure that the binaries and executables they're making use of, whether built internally or delivered from their suppliers, comply with the quality and security requirements it demands for their cars? Well, to ensure that these requirements are met, we recommend that all software in the vehicle should be scanned and ensure compliance. Now, while source code scanning can address some of these needs, source code isn't always available and doesn't take into account compiler options and transformations that may occur during compilation. Hence, the recommendation here is to perform binary software scanning. The binary code scanning tool could be integrated in the development and build environment of each company and be part integrated right into the standard development and QA process. So one example of a binary scanning tool is a recently announced BlackBerry Jarvis product. It's a cloud-based binary scanning tool that can be used during software development on an ongoing basis to provide essentially the overall security assessment of binaries. It can also scan for things like the use of insecure APIs, cyclomatic complexity, as well as compiler defenses such as fortify source for bounds checking, the use of stack cookies, position independent code, and so on. It can also check for compliance to guidelines and standards such as MISRA and CERT-C, for example. Lastly, in Pillar 1, we have penetration and vulnerability testing. We recommend that every supplier is subjected to a thorough penetration and vulnerability testing to help prevent the introduction of a bug or vulnerability, because each of these can potentially make its way right through and into the car. So think of it as a kind of approved for delivery evaluation to confirm that all vendors and vendor sites are certified through a vulnerability assessment and that they are required to maintain this approved for delivery certification on an ongoing basis. We're also recommending that this extend beyond just the vendor's products. It should extend to their IT infrastructure as well to assess if the enterprise itself can be certified as secure and approved for delivery. So now let's look at Pillar 2, trusted components. And this goes hand in hand with what we call a defense in depth approach. So what does defense in depth mean? Well, it's also been referred to as the castle approach. So the ideal castle design had many layers of defense. It had ditches, moats, ramparts, drawbridge, high walls, and they were all there to serve as layers of defense to protect the castle against attackers. A more modern way to look at this would be, how do you build a vault within a vault within a vault? So if a hacker got through the door in one vault, they would then immediately be met by another door on another vault, and so on. So similarly, with a defense in depth approach, you'd secure the entire ECU along with its sensitive data and resources with multiple protection layers, and you'd build each of these layers to be as resilient as possible to attack. Now let's look at the three fundamental elements of Pillar 2: toolkits, a secure operating system, and the use of trusted applications. First, we recommend the use of crypto toolkits to help protect the software and hardware in the car, and we recommend that the toolkits that are used be proven and trusted. For this, we can look to existing government standards for crypto, such as the NIST FIPS 140-2 standard, and make sure that we certify the crypto libraries against that. The toolkit should also be portable across a wide range of platforms, from back-end servers to gateways to domain controllers and to resource-constrained ECUs. For example, Certicom's FIPS certified crypto libraries have already secured hundreds of millions of smart connected devices, including millions of automotive ECUs. Now let's look at the operating system. We know that SoCs should store a secret key to provide a root of trust in order to support a secure boot and verify all subsequent software that's loaded on the ECU. The operating system should have a well-defined security architecture that's standards-based, multi-layered, and ideally have a proven pedigree in complex automotive embedded systems. This multi-layered OS architecture and the overall system should follow security best practices and support functionality such as encrypted file systems, mandatory access controls to limit access to resources in the system, POSIX permissions, access control lists, path space restrictions, and so on. The system should also be designed to follow the security principle of least privilege to ensure that every process, user, and program only has access to the information and resources that it needs. QNX uses fine-grained abilities, mandatory access controls, and system-level security policy to enforce this principle. Other operating systems will use similar mechanisms to do so as well. As part of this approach, you also need to minimize the use of root privilege. In fact, QNX supports complete rootless operation, as it supports the ability to have non-root processes to have selective access to privilege operations such as process creation, DMA access, priority setting. There's about 60 attributes in all. This allows for the design of a complete system without any root processes or objects owned by root. This approach should make it effectively impossible to achieve root privilege escalation. In terms of applications, we recommend that all applications be certified and signed by proper certification authorities. And in the case of automotive, the CERT authority or certification authority could be the automaker itself. The signature of the applications along with the signed manifest file would determine things like, you know, what resources in the system the application has access to, what priority it can run at, what amount of processing or memory it can use, and so on. And once these apps are signed, they need to run in their own restricted sandbox so they can't infect anything else in the system. These are some of the layered techniques that we're suggesting can be used to make the car resilient to attacks and be safe. The third pillar is what we call isolation, and this includes trusted messaging. In terms of isolation, let's start with discussing gateways and hypervisors. We recommend using a secure vehicle gateway with firewall technology to guard against malicious messages sent from the outside world to the car. This will help prevent unauthorized access to the car's ECUs and internal networks, and you won't be able to effectively get any messages through to the gateway unless you're an authenticated entity. Further, BlackBerry recommends that all ECUs that are safety critical be run on a network that's physically isolated from ECUs that have external access or ECUs that are not safety critical. Any non-safety critical ECUs trying to access a safety critical ECU should only be able to do so through a secure gateway that enforces strict policies. All traffic could then be authenticated and encrypted with rolling keys. Now, if we look at next generation domain controllers, like the example you see here, you'll also need an embedded real-time hypervisor. This hypervisor must provide separation and isolation for safety critical and non-safety critical functions, and such that each of these would run in their own protected virtual machine on a single SoC. So in this diagram, the instrument cluster is safety critical and the infotainment unit is not. So you need to make sure that if the infotainment system was compromised somehow, that it could not affect the safe operation of the instrument cluster in any way. To do this, the hypervisor must ensure the separation and isolation of these two functional modules. QNX demonstrated this at the Consumer Electronics Show in 2017, where to prove the point, we actually would reboot the entire system, entire infotainment module, I should say, to show that even this would not affect the digital instrument cluster despite the fact they were running on a single ECU and a single SoC. As we discussed earlier, we have a large number of ECUs in the car, and they're connected to internal and external networks. The internal networks can include CAN, FlexRay, Ethernet, LIN, or other automotive networks and buses. So how do you know that any one of these ECUs cannot inject a malicious message on the network or bus and potentially impact a safety critical function? Well, the way we protect against this is to recommend you do the following. First, you need to have a gateway, as shown in this diagram, and have it authenticate each of the ECUs. And second, once the ECU is authenticated, it will be provided with keys and will use those keys to sign all messages that it sends. With this approach, you can make sure that the messages are authentic and can be trusted. So if a rogue message is sent that's not properly signed, it'll be rejected by the gateway and the other ECUs. Finally, when cars talk to each other, or talk to infrastructure, or talk to other endpoints, we need to have a methodology to ensure that you can make the communication authentic and signed so that we know that the messages are legitimate and can't be repudiated. The messaging between the car and the outside world must be absolutely secure, trusted, and of course, all external communication should be managed and controlled by the secure vehicle gateway we talked about earlier. Regardless of what the V2X communication medium is, whether it's DSRC, which is dedicated short-range communications, or 4G LTE, or 5G, or some other wireless link, this fundamental principle applies, and we'll talk more about that in a bit. Pillar 4 is about in-field health checks, and there are two elements to this. So we know that when the connected car is on the road, that hackers can attempt to attack it. We also know that complex automotive software, just like any other software, is susceptible to bugs. So we recommend having an integrated system monitor along with analytics and diagnostic software throughout the car. These can enable all ECUs to capture events and logs and be able to potentially take corrective action locally, right in the car, in real time. These events and logs should also be sent to a cloud-based tool for further analysis and preventative action. Essentially, the ECUs in the car could self-monitor to look for significant events such as crashes or other anomalies, log them, and take action in real time, and or send the relevant information back to the cloud. We're starting to see a few of these cloud-based automotive analytics and diagnostics technologies being promoted in the market, and these types of products will definitely be an important part of an in-field health check solution. Next, we recommend that the car be scanned at periodic intervals to check if something is infected or not working as expected, or if traps have been triggered. If any of these occurred, the system information could be sent to the cloud, analyzed to determine cause and effect, and determine corrective action. We further recommend that a defined set of metrics be regularly scanned for in the car. This scan could be done on an event-driven basis, so for instance when an application is downloaded, or on a periodic basis to assess the security posture of the software. Then, if issues were uncovered, action could be taken and we could make use of over-the-air software, OTA software updates, or vehicle service centers, or other means to deliver the required data to the car, required update to the car. So let's take an example where we monitor the ECU software and notice if, you know, two processes are exchanging too much information, or some piece of software is trying to gain unauthorized access to data files or other ECUs or to a USB connection or other system services. This could mean that someone from the outside world has attacked the ECU and may also be trying to attack other systems in the car. So we could take action locally, if corrective action was possible, and send this information back to the infrastructure and to the cloud for action to be taken. This regular scanning of the car in the field and diagnosing what's going on or going wrong can help increase safety, prevent liability, and also allow you to do preventative maintenance. Pillar 5 is what we call rapid incident response, and it has two elements to it. First, let's talk about CVEs. So CVE stands for Common Vulnerabilities and Exposures. The CVE initiative was launched in 1999 by MITRE, and it's sponsored by US CERT within the Department of Homeland Security. CVE identifies and catalogs cybersecurity vulnerabilities in software or firmware and puts them into a freely accessible online dictionary and database. And in case you're interested, the CVE information can be found at cve.mitre.org if you want to have a look. So let's say that a CVE has been reported. We would want to alert the automaker and their trusted network about the CVE, so that it can be investigated and fixed and deployed to the field. But the challenge is, of course, how do you share this information rapidly and securely? Well, if we could rapidly and securely alert every automaker, supplier, and other key stakeholders about the reported vulnerabilities, they could respond to the alert, work to determine the risk, their exposure, the potential damage, and could even add non-proprietary information related to the issue to a secure database. This information could be shared with other automakers or authorized stakeholders for them to learn from, and if their software was exposed to that same vulnerability, they could take action. Having such a network with secure communications and databases would be very useful, especially when you have a large number of global auto supplier or global automakers, suppliers, and other key stakeholders. This would make it much easier and much more secure to share information. We call this a rapid incident response network or the Crisis Connect network. Now, if a CVE or vulnerability is discovered, there'll of course be a time lag between the discovery of the issue and the fix. And this time lag varies, but is obviously a risk period, and it's necessary to alert stakeholders on what to do until a fix can be deployed. As an example, if a vulnerability has been detected and has impacted a car, it could take many months to diagnose, to fix, test, and update the car with the new software. In the meantime, the owner of the car, or the car and the owner of the car is exposed to that vulnerability. Well, what if we could send an advisory to the owner of the car in a timely manner in advance of the fix being deployed? We could tell them about the function or the system at risk and reduce their risk profile and make them safe. As an example, let's say that the Bluetooth stack was at risk. An advisory could be sent to the vehicle and to the driver saying something like, your car's Bluetooth function has been compromised, so please don't use that function or wirelessly connect your smartphone to your car until we get you an update. In the case of BlackBerry, as an example, it could leverage its ad hoc emergency notification service to alert customers regarding the vulnerability and which precautions to take during that risk period. These types of timely advisories and alerts could be very useful in preventing mass scale issues.
All right, and we're back with the second poll question. Here it is. Which of the following automotive security-related standards, guidelines, or initiatives are you most familiar with? ISO or SAE AWI 21434, which is Cybersecurity Engineering Framework for Road Vehicles, Auto ISEC, Automotive Information Sharing and Analysis Center, SAE J3061 standard for cybersecurity in cyber-physical vehicle systems, SAE's TV's 18A1, Cybersecurity Assurance Testing Task Force, or none of them. Give you a few seconds to go through our four or five options here. And let's see the results. None of the above. Grant, what do you make of
Whoa.
That?
We've got work to do. That's okay. I mean, the good news is there's a lot of initiatives, and I'll just call them initiatives, underway. Some are guidelines, some are moving towards establishing standards, some are moving potentially towards certification. So the ISO 21434 might be going down that road. Each of them has value. Each of them has value to add and knowledge to share. And these are just a short list. I mean, there are many, many more groups and initiatives out there regarding automotive cybersecurity. And again, they're all pulling together stakeholders. And by stakeholders, it's everybody from, you know, Homeland Security, the NSA, various levels of government, automakers, tier ones, tier twos, companies involved in IT security. It's really trying to bring together experts and best practices and establish some common baseline, if you like, that we can all adhere to in the supply chain and in automotive. As I mentioned, ultimately, we hope to see some sort of certification that the industry agrees to, and something that can be certified against, using a third party. But, you know, a lot, or just like the ISO 26262 standard was adopted by the automotive industry broadly and globally, I think eventually we'll see something like that as it pertains to security. Okay. Pillar 6 is about lifecycle management or software lifecycle management, and it's got three elements to it. The first is software over-the-air updates. As mentioned, cars and their software have a lifespan of 7 to 15 years or so. And during that time, updating the software over-the-air will be an absolute must, as there will be things like new software-enabled features or functionality that will be available, new software services that the automaker will want to make available, bugs will be discovered and fixed, and security vulnerabilities could also be addressed. We recommend that the OTA service is global in nature, ultra secure, and has a proven track record. We also recommend that the entire software package be signed, and that every block within that package be signed using the secure signing method that we talked about in Pillar 2. Additionally, any manifest or container wrapped around the whole package should also be signed. And once this is all done, the update can then be sent to the car. And of course, the car would need to have special keys and certificates before it could even open the software update payload. The same approach should also be applied for any commands sent to the car wirelessly. So the OTA software updates will allow the car to remotely reflash ECUs in the car without you having to bring your car back into a service center. This provides tremendous convenience to the consumer. So as well as part of Pillar 6, we have something called Unified Endpoint Management. So suppose you have a car that's shared by a family, and each driver wants to download and make use of their favorite apps or change features or settings in the car. Or better yet, think of car sharing or rental cars where you have multiple users or drivers of the same vehicle where each of them wants to personalize vehicle settings while they have the car. We recommend that the vehicle be equipped with what we call a policy engine, and that policy engine could download software to manage these applications and make sure that proper policies are adhered to before the apps are downloaded and used. We also recommend that it could securely delete or wipe out all personal data and settings and restore the vehicle to a default state after usage. This policy engine would help ensure that you don't have one person's apps or one person's data impacting another. Now let's look at secure credential management. We know that a typical car in the future could have could have 100 to a few thousand certificates on hand at any one point in time. So the recommendation is to use a secure credential management system that leverages industry-proven PKI to authenticate ECUs, to secure communications within the vehicle network, and to secure external communications to back-end systems. The credential management system will also help automate key provisioning scenarios once a car has left the factory, and will help secure the entire automotive supply chain. Management of these certificates is, you know, definitely by no means trivial. For instance, you know, how do you know that these certificates are authentic or valid, not expired? And you know, one of the examples I thought of that we could talk about is for Security Credential Management Service, or SCMS, is let's look at V2X for a minute. With V2X, so vehicle-to-vehicle, vehicle-to-infrastructure, we know that the car will likely require up to 20 certificates per week. And that cellular V2X, which is essentially cellular vehicle-to-vehicle communications, will require even more, something like 60 to 100 certs per week per vehicle. Well, V2X makes use of a PKI infrastructure-based approach that uses innovative methods of encryption and certificate management to enable secure and trusted communications. V2X is a key part of safety systems and on the path and on the road to automated and autonomous vehicles. And the nice thing it does is that it ensures that the certificates have no owner ID and that these certificates are also changed frequently to prevent tracking by any observers. Another interesting aspect of the V2X SCMS is the ability to do misbehavior reporting and detection. So if we had a vehicle that tried to send bogus V2X messages, this infected or rogue vehicle could be identified as one which is no longer trusted for sending and receiving V2X messages and would have its certificates blacklisted. Now, this is a very complicated topic, and the good news is there's many reference documents describing credential management, SCMS, PKI, V2X, you know, and I encourage everyone, if they're interested, to review these or, you know, contact us and we'd be happy to point you in the right direction. And now, for the last pillar, pillar 7. We recommend instituting a safety and security culture in every organization that builds hardware and software for the cars. Specifically, we recommend that every organization involved in supplying electronics and software to the auto industry is trained in safety and security with best practices and to instill this culture within the organization. This training includes a design and development culture, as well as IT system security. This will require experts who are trained in safety and security, as well as very well-defined processes and tools. As for software validation, we recommend that the industry look to third-party certification authorities. An example of one of these certification authorities will be a company like TÜV or TÜV Rheinland. We've used them to obtain our ISO 26262 and IEC 61508 safety certifications for our operating system, graphics monitor, and other products. And we've extended their safety training and best practices throughout the organization. And of course, the whole life cycle must be managed to make sure that you maintain the proper cybersecurity and safety training, processes, tools, and certifications to make sure that the car remains safe and secure. So, this is BlackBerry 7 pillar recommendation for automotive cybersecurity. This summary slide shows the 7 pillars along with each of the pillars' primary elements, as well as some of the BlackBerry products available today or planned. With that, I'll hand it over to Brandon for questions and wrap up.
Thanks a lot, Grant, and sure. That was a really, really interesting presentation and a lot of great audience feedback looking at security of next-gen automobiles. And as Grant said, that brings us to the Q&A portion of the event. I want to remind the audience that you should keep your questions coming using the submit question button or box, and we'll get to as many of them as we can in the time that we have remaining. And, oh, one more reminder is there's an exit survey, so be sure to stick around. All right, Grant. So question number one, let's see. I think you touched on this a bit, but perhaps you could go a little bit more in depth. What are the built-in security protection mechanisms of the QNX OS?
In terms of the OS, we were talked about some of them in the slides earlier. Can't remember the slide number, but you know, suffice to say that QNX has many security features, and these have been augmented over the years, and especially after we were acquired by BlackBerry in 2010. The operating system's always been at the heart of, you know, safe and secure systems, and you know, when people would ask me where would they find QNX, I'd always say, well, you know, everywhere but the desktop. So wherever you'll see an embedded mission critical, life critical, or safety critical device. So, you know, for instance, you'll find us in, as it pertains to security, a couple examples. Let's see, you'll find us in ultra secure, the Harris Falcon 3 software-defined radios. Again, secure military routers use QNX. Financial systems are based on QNX. You know, and of course, we're well over 60 million cars on the road today. Early 2017, we also launched QNX 7, which is supports 32-bit and 64-bit. And is absolutely our most high-performance and most secure operating system ever. The easiest way for people to find out more about sort of the security features and functionality in the operating system is really just to go to our website, because all of our documentation is online, and that's the API documentation, as well as methodologies and best practices. And if you don't find what you're looking for there, obviously, you know, drop us an email. We'll be happy to tell you more.
That's great. Here's a really important question, especially for people who speak German. Safety is mentioned a lot when it comes to security. Can you make a differentiation between the two and also how they're related?
Good question. In fact, in German, it's the same word, if I remember right.
Right.
For safety and security. I can't pronounce it, so I'm not going to try. But, I mean, at the end of the day, there definitely is a link between safety and security. I mean, we recognize it, and I'm sure most of the people on the call today have also recognized it. In fact, we've been saying for years that you can't have a safe system unless it's a secure system. And, you know, some of the car hacks and whatnot that we talked about earlier and pretty much everything we've talked about in the presentation today are evidence of that. I mean, today we all know cars are, you know, very much have drive-by-wire functionality. In other words, you hack into a car and get access to the safety-critical ECUs, then you can affect the safety of the vehicle. I mean, some of the hacks have clearly demonstrated that. I mean, just look at them. Some of them were able to hack into the car and gain control of braking, steering, throttle, HVAC, and whatnot. And as I mentioned earlier, the awareness at both industry and the consumer has gone way up. And I think it's pretty obvious today people know that if you hack into a vehicle or if you compromise the security of a vehicle, then it's definitely possible to compromise the safety of the vehicle. And that's what a lot of this is about. They're extremely closely linked. Now, little sidebar. I don't have to worry about this on my old 66 Mustang, but for modern cars, definitely a concern. And honestly, that's why we put together our 7-pillar recommendation. I have a lot of fun with the people in our Autonomous Vehicle Innovation Center here in Ottawa. When we're, you know, adding electronics to the car and software and whatnot, and I always ask them, say, hey, I should bring in my old Mustang. And, well, to be honest, in my Mustang, there's nothing, quote-unquote, electronic in there other than, I think, the radio, if I had to think about it. So, you know, I'd suggest that, you know, all safety-critical – the other thing, I mean, anybody who's building a safety-critical device, so any safety-critical device manufacturers – they really should review these recommendations and leverage them where possible, you know, regardless of what market they're in. The key, really, bottom line, is to look at cybersecurity holistically and not as piecemeal or an add-on exercise, because, yes, definitely a link between safety and security.
Good stuff. Can these cybersecurity recommendations that you address in this presentation be extrapolated beyond automotive into other markets like industrial and you know, where QNX is typically plays?
Definitely. And
also
definitely. Agreed. I mean, this presentation, obviously, and these recommendations are focused on the automotive market. But if you look at the seven pillar recommendations, most of them would apply to many other markets. So, you know, QNX, BlackBerry, being an embedded software vendor that provides software across many market segments, I mean, we see firsthand the needs for these kinds of, you know, security best practices and principles, especially with connected embedded devices. Because, again, in embedded in general, or what you might call, you know, general embedded, if you look over the years, devices, many of them have gone from, I'll say, discrete embedded devices that weren't connected to all of a sudden being connected embedded devices. And cybersecurity attacks, they know no bounds in terms of markets and whatnot. So they're very broad in nature, and of course we're hearing more and more about them these days. I mean, I think what the most recent vulnerability that we've encountered, that we've heard about, is the Spectre or Meltdown vulnerability. And again, that was across many, many markets.
Great. All right. Let's see. Are a lot of vehicle recalls that you're seeing today, are they the result of software and particularly anything related to maybe an operating system?
Oh, definitely. So, you know, as much as we'd like to say, and I think all of us would like to say, our software is perfect and bug-free, well, the fact of the matter is, you know, software does have potential bugs. And there's industry metrics and studies and whatnot that prove that. So with respect to software and vehicles, we're definitely seeing more vehicle recalls as it pertains to software, and definitely becoming more of the issue. I'm trying to remember, but I think I remember reading back in 2016, there was a report about auto warranty and recalls, and back then they said that software recalls had gone from, you know, less than 5%, I think in 2011, if I remember right, you know, to 15% by the end of 2015. I'm sure I could find that reference, and, you know, if someone searches for it, I'm sure they'll find it. And I also remember reading a J.D. Power report that also showed that. So I think it's common knowledge, and I think because the warranty recalls and whatnot, all that information is accessible. I think that definitely, and we know that, the number of recalls related to software is going up. And, oh, geez, in fact, I think it was mid last year, I also received a recall notice for my vehicle, and guess what? It was a recall, and it was great that they put all this in writing. But anyways, it was a recall related to software. It was a software update that was required, and it was related to the operation of my airbags and I think the seatbelt under certain driving conditions. Well, unfortunately, my vehicle doesn't have a telematics unit and has absolutely no way of getting an OTA update. So despite the fact that was in, I think it was May or June, you know, the only way I can get that update is take my car into the dealership to get it fixed. And while I don't visit the dealership that often, so guess what? Haven't had it fixed despite the fact it's been, whatever, 6 or 7 months. So, yeah, I haven't done that yet, and I'll probably get it done next month. In fact, I will when I bring my car in for its oil change. But, you know, there's a real-world, and in this case, very personal example of where a software update was required, a recall had to be issued. And then, you know, you start to think of the costs involved in that, where the automaker had to inform me, and this was essentially a letter, so nothing electronic, and then I had to essentially, I'll just say, inconvenience myself, if you like, but have to make a special trip to the dealership to get that updated. So, you know, back to, you know, a bit about what we were talking about earlier, about, you know, a Crisis Connect network, about being able to securely do OTA updates, about being able to notify the driver or the owner of the vehicle, in this case myself, that there was a vulnerability. Those are all things that are part of the seven pillar recommendations and, you know, again, 100% apply to software updates and will definitely help reduce software recalls and will reduce costs and whatnot. So
I think it's important to point out, too, that, you know, the seven pillars apply to the suppliers and the manufacturers, because one of the reasons that there are these problems with these software recalls is that a lot of this code is being sourced from multiple suppliers, right?
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the supply chain is quite complex. There's many levels to it. And, you know, essentially, as you're saying, that supply chain, even the nature of it is changing a bit, where you're starting to see automakers licensed directly from tier twos, where you're starting to see new entrants come into automotive. At the end of the day, you know, the car is becoming a platform. The car is becoming a mobile platform, a software or a mobile connected platform. From a QNX perspective, we're looking to be that OS platform for the car for safety and non-safety critical systems. But your point is bang on in the sense that what we're talking about here, the seven pillars for automotive cybersecurity, applies to absolutely every supplier in automotive and the automakers. And again, you really do have to look at it from end to end. You really do have to look at it holistically. And as an industry, if we can adopt these practices, then we'll make that car much more secure and also make that car much safer.
Good stuff. Here's a question about binary code scanning. What tools exist for binary code scanning, and does BlackBerry QNX offer one?
So I think I may have mentioned it, but we just announced a tool called BlackBerry Jarvis. That was announced recently and launched by John Chen at the North American International Auto Show. And it does binary scanning. I mean, people can go to QNX.com, obviously, to find out more. So binary scanning is definitely one of the recommendations that that we've made. And, I mean, if you think about the nature of software, as I mentioned, there's the source code scanning. And, again, this is just one piece of it. But we felt that the proper recommendation, or the best recommendation, if you like, would be to do binary scanning, because it's actually what's running in the car, or it's actually what's running on your system that talks to the car. So it's not, you know, the source code that then goes through a compiler and linker and whatnot and gets essentially transformed into executables and binaries. It's actually what's running in the car. So if there was a sophisticated tool like Jarvis, and, you know, there may be others, I'm not an expert in this area, but like BlackBerry Jarvis, then we could look at the binaries, that end tool, and again, integrate it as part of the, you know, the development process, such that developers could use it on their desktop. It's cloud-based, built into the build and test environments. Essentially wire it right into the quality assurance process. That's really the key with a lot of this, is that you really want to make it part of your process, make it part of the, you know, cliche, but the DNA of your company, the types of people you hire and how they work. So binary scanning, absolutely very important. And again, we're seeing some tremendous results. I think, if I remember right, JLR were on stage endorsing the product, and they had an interesting reference whereby they said they could scan the software that they ran through the Jarvis tool. They could scan it in 7 minutes, and they were estimating that it would take about 30 days for security experts to go through. So there's tremendous efficiencies to be had. And, you know, the nice thing is, as I kind of mentioned earlier, is there's no, you know, the automakers, there's no common standard, if you like, or no easy way for them to push a standard down or requirements down of that nature through the supply chain. So with some tool, some binary scanning tool, then all of a sudden you could actually have the whole supply chain making use of the tool and adhering to whichever standards the automaker wanted to set for whichever platform they were building.
Lack of standards goes back to something we were talking about before the presentation.
Well, the old joke is you can never have enough, right? But anyways.
That's great stuff. Here's a really interesting forward-looking question. What about cybersecurity of the road infrastructure when we get into V2X environments?
Good point. So that's where, you know, an SCMS will come into play for sure. And again, looking at security holistically, yes, there's the car on the road and the devices in the car connecting to the vehicle. But then, yeah, infrastructure, so think traffic lights and back-end services and whatnot. Every element of that supply chain needs to follow the recommended practices that we're putting forward. So, for instance, in Ottawa last October, we actually had our autonomous vehicle, our autonomous concept car, on the road, and we were actually talking V2X to a traffic light. So, you know, we have a vehicle here, and others have probably seen it at CES and whatnot, but it's a vehicle that we have, which is a learning vehicle, an engineering vehicle. We, you know, we do tremendous amounts of research, but we also learn a lot by doing. So we put the car on the road, we worked with the city and essentially had the car talking to traffic lights, driving autonomously on the road. And, you know, that was exciting for the city. Obviously, it was a Canadian first, which was awesome. But to your point, the V2X infrastructure, whatever element it is of that infrastructure, also has to follow these practices, these recommended practices.
Great. All right, we got time for about one more since we got to get to that exit survey. Could you repeat, Grant, the safety security certifiers?
The one I mentioned is just the one we use. There's many of them out there, and I'm sure, you know, depending who's in the audience, they may have been through some of these certifications. The certification authority that we used, or certification lab that we used, is TÜV Rheinland. The feedback we received from the automotive industry is that, you know, TÜV Rheinland was very well respected, as well as there's many others that are very well respected. And so we worked with them to, like I said, to certify our operating system to the highest level for ISO 26262. We use them to certify our operating system for IEC 61508, which is an industrial safety standard. So I think, you know, looking forward, and if we think about some of the cybersecurity initiatives and guidelines and groups that we were looking for earlier, I think as an industry and the discussions we've had is we're all heading towards establishing some kind of security standard in automotive. And then the ultimate goal would be to have something like what's involved with 26262, but have some way to have a third party be able to certify that software and the processes and whatnot to a standard that essentially the industry adopts as a best practice. But absolutely think that that's the way to go, and that will happen, and you're starting to see that kind of discussion in some of the groups, some of the security groups that are there now.
That's great stuff. All right. Well, I want to thank you so much, Grant, for giving us some insight there into security climate around automobiles. And for those of you out there who didn't get to your question, we'll make sure to have the appropriate representatives at QNX follow up with you. I want to thank BlackBerry QNX for the time today and for being a sponsor of this event. I want to thank you, Grant, for some great insight there as well. And the audience, of course, we couldn't do this without you. Thanks for contributing some great questions and staying tuned. There's also an exit survey right now. Make sure you take part in that. We'd love to get your feedback and see how we can improve. Until next time, take care.
Yep, and just as a quick reminder, if people do want to find out more about the seven pillars and whatnot, definitely go to the QNX.com website. The white paper's there, and it'll cover and talk a lot about some of the things that we spoke about today. And if anybody has any questions, absolutely, feel free to contact us. Thanks.